Kent Biz Connect on Radio Ashford with Martin White.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Biz Connect radio show. This will be our final show before Christmas, and we thought we'd keep it very topical with everything that's been in the news recently. So we're going to be dissecting last week's budget in some detail today. Now that the dust has settled, hopefully we can kind of have a rational and kind of pragmatic discussion around that. So I'll introduce our guest in a moment. You can follow us, of course, as always, on Twitter at Kent_Biz. We also have a dedicated LinkedIn and Facebook show page, so please search for us at Biz Connect Radio Show. And we also have our own website, kentbizconnect.co.uk, and you can find out more information about today's guest and also details of our forthcoming shows on there. If you're an Ashford-based business or organisation and you've got an interesting story that you have to tell, we would love to hear from you and also perhaps invite you onto the show. So do please get in touch with us. But as I said right at the beginning, we're here today to talk about the budget, the autumn budget that was so eagerly anticipated and so written about in advance of the budget. We do have to make some excuses today for one of our guests who sadly can't be with us. That's Adrian Dante, who's come down with a bit of Montezuma's revenge, I think he described it as. So thank God he hasn't come into the studio today. But we do have another guest with us, and I'm going to ask him to introduce himself.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Martin. Thanks for having me on again. My name's Simon Bailey. I'm a partner at a firm of accountants in Canterbury called Burgess Hodgson. And unfortunately, Adrian, my partner in crime, can't join us, but I'm sure that means we'll go into a little more of the detail around the recent budget. So,
brilliant. Thank you, Simon, for joining us today. I think what we're going to do, we normally have some tracks chosen by our studio guests, but I've chosen them this week. I've been listening to the crooners all weekend, so I've got a bit of Nat King Cole, Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr. and Dean Martin all lined up today, so hopefully you'll enjoy that as well. And I think that's what we're going to do now. We're going to play a couple of tracks, and when we come back, we're going to talk in more detail to Simon. So we'll be right back after this.
Kent Biz Connect, connecting businesses in Kent and around the world.
Oh, welcome back, everybody. A couple of beautiful songs there from Nat King Cole and Natalie and Nat King Cole to start the show today. Thank you so much for tuning into the Biz Connect radio show. As we were saying before the break, we're going to be talking all about the budget today and what it means for businesses, small businesses in particular. And we have a super guest joining us in the studio today, Simon Bailey from local accountants, Burgess Hodgson. Simon, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. That was probably better than my my song choices, so just as well you took the reins on that one, I think, Martin.
Great to have you with us. Now, the dust has clearly settled in terms of, the fallout from the budget that we had from the Chancellor. I have to say, I watched the Chancellor deliver the budget in the Commons live, and I was quietly optimistic when she started to deliver her speech, because she was talking about, she was talking about the need to back entrepreneurs, to start up, to scale up businesses and drive innovation in the UK in line with their newly published industrial strategy, which I think is IS8. Mm-hmm. But did the substance really kind of reflect what she was saying in terms of the ambition there? I think that's what we need to try and dissect today, isn't it?
Yeah.
'Cause there's a lot of information missing. When she talks about, backing entrepreneurs, it's like, well, we've had enterprise investment schemes, we've had other investment schemes as well that incentivize people to back businesses, but there's talk of that continuing, but there was no detail around any of that, for example.
No, I mean, as always, the detail tends to sort of follow in the weeks afterwards. Obviously, we'll be pouring through that.
Yeah.
I think the opening point is that we are just in a really difficult and complex tax landscape. I mean, it is a complex system. There are multiple rates. It's difficult enough if you're sort of tax trained and you work in the industry, let alone if it's not your sort of bread and butter. I think she's tightened, in some respects, she's tightened a lot of the tax environment for businesses. But as you say, there are some new incentives. So it's a little bit sort of take with one hand, give with the other. Yeah. So I think there will be some substance behind what she's said. Yeah. And I think it's just about understanding the detail and how businesses can pivot or change. And sometimes they'll be able to. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, the opportunities might only be for, you know, new businesses coming to the market, for example. Or
it could have been, it could have been in many ways a sort of a speech by Donald Trump, couldn't it? Because, you know, it was all about backing Britain. You know, and it was all about kind of, you know, reshoring production, for example, you know, made in Britain. And, you know, all of the kind of, you know, all of the kind of the words around that that Trump often kind of talks about. So, you know, that was quite interesting to hear. And I guess the other thing we need to kind of think about in the context of all of this is we are, you know, we live in a truly global economy today, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas before, you know, we used to wait for a budget and it was 5p on a, packet of fags and 2p on a pint of beer, and that was really it.
It also was all very immediate stuff. It was stuff that kicked in either that night or in a few months' time. Mm-hmm. They'd sort of say what was going to come out, and then you'd know where you are. Sometimes it would be, it used to be one budget a year in March that would tell you what was happening from the 6th of April. Shortly afterwards, you'd plan for that year, and you'd, and away you go. We're in an environment now for the last probably 5-10 years where there's a lot of announcements are very forward looking.
Mm.
So some of the things we heard about in November don't take effect until 2030, 2031 or 28, 29. Yeah. So there's a lot of things, A, to think about.
Yeah.
B, you've got to wrap your head around when they're kicking in and when you should be thinking about them. But it also means in previous budgets, there are still things that haven't kicked in yet that we were told about last year or the year before that. So there's a lot of, you've almost got 4 or 5 budgets overlapping every single tax year, which, as I said, it makes it very complicated to navigate.
Well, let's try and focus in on what we think are some of the positives in terms of the highlights. Business taxes, and investment. So investment in terms of, you know, new business startups, we kind of mentioned right at the top, and that was, you know, very much the kind of the starting point for her.
And I don't think so, you know, if you work in tax, I think the things like VCT, EIS and the like, there are really good opportunities there, and they can have a big impact, particularly if if you've got an entrepreneurial business is going to go through its life cycle from startup to exit, that can have, that can be a very valuable relief, requires sort of planning right from the outset. But there's opportunities there, and that's been, I think some of the thresholds and limits have been sort of doubled. Some of the criteria around EMI schemes, which is a way of incentivizing your staff, have sort of widened. So I think for people that use those or could use those, they, you know, obviously it's not easy when you hear these things to really know what that really means potentially for business, but they are very valuable relief, so they shouldn't be underplayed.
And I think, you know, the interesting thing about that is, you know, there's clearly a desire to get people investing in smaller companies in terms of buying shares, you know, whether it's as an angel investor, you know, and writing off that investment, but actually, more fundamentally, you know, buying shares in smaller businesses. And I think that's also directly related to the ISA kind of reform, isn't it, in many ways? You know, you used to be able to invest £20,000 a year in cash.
Trying to sort of, you know, evolve the behaviour of different groups as well. So there's a real sort of focus around the younger generation. They're looking for more dynamic investment and not just putting cash away. And so it's interesting if you really look at it's the behaviours they're trying to change.
So now you can still invest £20,000 tax free, but only 12 of it can be cash and 8 needs to be shares. But I think that's, you know, one of the criticisms that the city have had in terms of the system in the past, is that, you know, we don't encourage people to back small businesses by buying shares in them.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is clearly a direct attempt to kind of, you know, address that.
Yeah, and some of the things that have been removed, I think we were doing the last time we were on, we were talking about the restrictions on the relief for things like business property relief, inheritance tax and agricultural property relief. Mm-hmm. So these are things for like the business owners on their exit, but the sort of the newer incentives more around people putting money in backing business as opposed to the angel, you know, the investors themselves. But I think we do need to be mindful of making sure that there is the incentive for people to take risks and start up a business. And I think there's a real balancing act between the reliefs that are available, you know, the incentives on the way in, but but also what the rewards are at the end. So, you know, selling your business and paying 10% tax up to 10 million was on the cards a number of years ago. That's now reduced to 1 million. And, you know, the rates are now creeping up. So next April, they'll be creeping up to 18% versus 24% for other types of assets. So there's eroding of reliefs in some respects. But they clearly do understand that the SME sector is the bedrock of our the growth we need, really.
Employee ownership trusts were something that got clobbered, weren't they, in the in the budget as well.
I think it's
you know, a real shame, you know, when you think about businesses who, you know, go down that road and make a commitment to effectively, you know, transferring ownership to their staff. John Lewis, I think, is a is a staff owned business, isn't it? You know, they're all partners in the business.
Yeah, I mean, we'll still see it where clearly the motivation is very much to make sure that, you know, the staff sort of take ownership of these businesses. If that's the main reason, it's obviously still doable. There's going to be increased costs to think about. But I think as a pure tax planning tool, which I think is what it had been also used for, which they didn't like so much, that's clearly going to be sort of curtailed. So I'm sure we'll see slightly less of that.
Okay. But, so just to summarise on that point, you know, that you know, we await some more detail in terms of, you know, the expansion of entrepreneurial investment schemes, whether it's EIS or whatever it might be. So yeah, I think there's still some detail to follow on that. But, you know, certainly there was a clear message in terms of backing Britain, backing small businesses to start up, backing businesses to scale up. Let's wait and see, you know, what comes down
the pipe. Just want the detail to follow the narrative, really.
So we need some stuff there.
One thing I was pleased about was the business rates.
Yes.
I think hospitality in particular had a bit of a torrid time through sort of COVID and coming out of COVID. I think we'll all see some of the sort of gaps on the high street. You know, where certain, you know, certain retail and pubs, et cetera, used to be. So I think the rates, you know, release on those businesses, I think that's going to help that sort of sector recover. I think they were certainly, I think some industries came out quite well through COVID, and I think that was one that got hit particularly hard. So
hospitality, high street retail. So they're saying that, you know, there's going to be roughly 750,000 businesses, I think, who will benefit from permanently lower business rates.
I think that's going to, that'll be very valuable to those businesses. So I think it's a, at least some of it's being, I think, applied in the right area.
There was a lot of talk about VAT, wasn't there, pre-budget? Will they, you know, will there be a VAT concession on hospitality, for example? Which, I mean, inevitably that won't find its way into the pocket of the consumer. But it would help, you know, hospitality businesses.
And we saw that through COVID, and obviously that was, that did make a big difference.
But no mention of that.
No. So there was a few taxes we were worried about they might change. So there was some, you know, notable by their absence of being mentioned. So, you know, CGT wasn't mentioned.
Capital gains tax
as well. So, there's always a fear that some of these are going to be.
Tax.
Yeah. And I think they've, come out quite clearly said that I think I read somewhere that for the duration of their reign, that they're going to be sort of frozen. So unlikely to see them being cut, but at least it won't get any worse after the sort of near sort of 6% hike we had a few years ago.
Yeah. And the last time we were in the studio with Adrian, you know, it was all about national insurance.
Yes.
So, you know, that has been left at its new level, obviously. Again, at least it provides some certainty for employers in terms of, you know, planning for that overhead increase going forward.
I think generally out there, there's a lot of business owners I spoke to in the last few weeks or months and since previous budgets. I think they really, they feel like they're being, you know, backed and the government's saying, yeah, we need you for help with the growth of the economy and help with unemployment, etc. But I think some of them felt like they were being sort of paid lip service, but being sort of clobbered a bit in a few areas. So I think just a bit of stability, I'm sure will be appreciated, even if there's no cuts or reversals.
Yeah. There was something else that the Chancellor was very keen to talk about, up front as well, which was, you know, the kind of the low productivity malaise that we suffer from in this country. I mean, it's non-existent in terms of, you know, it's just flatline, hasn't it, for years. So, you know, she talked about the fact that public sector investment is an important contributor here in terms of, you know, showing the way. And, you know, she talked about £120 billion worth of investment, including, you know, in Kent, Lower Thames Crossing, for example. And, you know, there's been new money allocated to actually make sure that that project does now come to fruition. So, you know, that will certainly benefit, you know, the SME supply chain in Kent massively.
Yep.
I think there's a huge commitment to making sure that, you know, and we've had things like, you know, the new Procurement Act this year as well. I think there's huge commitment to making sure that there's more of a level playing field when it comes to SMEs being able to, get involved on large kind of tier one driven construction projects, for example. So that will be interesting to see how that kind of filters down. And obviously there's very much a green agenda around that whole project as well. So, you know, here it's going to be the greenest kind of, you know, construction projects of its type ever.
Yeah. Which probably also means nowhere near budget, but we'll see.
Absolutely. It's bound to run over. So that was interesting. She talked about kind of, you know, planning laws being overhauled. We know we've got this, you know, 1.5 million homes that we need to build, but we also know at the same time that we have massive, you know, planning, local planning restriction, and the kind of the paperwork that needs to be got through, and the consultation process that needs to take place for a housing developer to build 20 houses.
Yeah, I think for every new development you see, you see three times as many signs sort of blocking new sites. And we understand you've got to be sensitive where they're built, but we do.
So we need to see what happens there. And obviously she also mentioned nuclear power. You know, there's this commitment going forwards to building, you know, through the likes of Rolls-Royce, for example, small scale, localized nuclear power stations. So let's wait and see what happens there. You know, that's obviously going to cost a bit of money as well. But you know, so, you know, there is some, you know, there is some interesting stuff on the horizon when it comes to public sector spending to kind of support these big projects. So let's wait and see. And also, you know, she mentioned building local health centres as well. You know, I can't remember how many, but, you know, there were a few £100 million being allocated to help, you know, community health centres to, again, you know, provide better service, alleviate pressure on the NHS, you know, which is clearly one of their key missions as well.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the general population, I think they appreciate, you know, taxes can rise, but I think much like in any service industry, you know, we see it a lot. The price is secondary as long as there's quality of service and you feel like you're getting value for money. Yeah. So I think a lot of people we speak to, they kind of almost don't mind paying what they would consider their fair share of tax. Mm. But I think we just want to see it being used efficiently and in the right areas. So it'd be interesting to see some of these newer schemes.
Yeah, and I think, you know, is it enough, you know, would be my question. You know, is there enough in there? You know, I mean, you know, you've got the kind of investment write down in year one, for example, on capital expenditure. But I mean, that's kind of always been there, hasn't it? But I think you can now write more of it down in the first year than perhaps you could before.
Oh, in terms of investment for businesses, if a business company spends £100 in year one, then you're allowed, there's up to £1 million of capital expenditure, qualifying capital expenditure, then you're allowed that written off your profits in year one.
Yeah.
They spoke about a new 40% first year writing down allowance to, even though the main allowances are being sort of eroded slightly. That won't really affect the SME sector that much because you do need to be spending in excess of £1 million a year on, you know, equipment, you know, capital expenditure to even worry about that. Yeah. So it's going to be much larger businesses. Yeah. That's the much larger businesses that care about those changing rates. Yeah. So I think for most the SME sector, I think £1 million is more than enough.
And I think, you know, this is the crux of it. You know, we're talking about small and medium sized businesses who are half of the UK economy. You know, is there enough in there to actually incentivize them to go out and invest in driving productivity, for example, through whatever it might be, you know, AI or, you know, more advanced manufacturing, you know, which again is a key industrial strategy mission that the government have outlined.
Yeah, I think we'll see. I mean, we're asking them to spend and invest a lot.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, some of those sort of incentives and their retirement succession exit plans are being slightly sort of tinkered with or eroded. So I think it's, I think it's just planning's going to be the key. Yeah. They're going to have to sort of get the tax plan out the bottom drawer and revisit it just to see if they can make the best of it. But I think I'd like to think so. I know the markets in general seemed relatively stable.
But again, you know, they're big business orientation and big numbers, not SME necessarily. So I think, I mean, what we've tried to do is in the last 10 minutes is kind of, is put the positives on it.
Yeah.
I think what we'll do is play a bit more music. And when we come back, we'll talk about perhaps some of the less positive aspects of the budget from a small business owner.
Yeah. Which is important because that's where you can be most effective in terms of planning and do something about it.
Certainly the ones that I've spoken to, the general feeling is, you know, it's not necessarily the most positive, feeling out there and warmth towards this that, you know, that there might have been.
So. No, I've definitely attended a few recent events and I think there's a little, some sort of small business or medium business owners feel a little bit.
We're getting clobbered again.
Absolutely. Let's try give them a way out.
Right, so we're going to play a bit more music and we're going to get to grips with some of that in the second part of the show. Do stay with us. We've got a little bit of Frank Sinatra and we have got The Girl from Ipanema.
Kent Biz Connect on Radio Ashford with Martin White.
Welcome back, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning into the BizConnect radio show today. I've got Simon Bailey from Accountants Burgess Hodgson in the studio with me today. Simon, great to have you here.
Thank you very much.
We're dissecting, or attempting to dissect, and kind of get our heads around what the budget really means for kind of small business owners in particular. And we've been trying to focus in on some of the kind of positive rhetoric around the budget when the Chancellor delivered her speech in terms of, you know, the need to back Britain and back entrepreneurs and scaling up and productivity and all these wonderful things. But we're kind of questioning whether or not the kind of substance of what she delivered kind of lives up to the, to that rhetoric and the kind of the dream, if you like. So what I want to focus in on now, if we can, is this kind of thing that everybody talks about in terms of the tax drag, and the kind of freezing of tax thresholds and really what that's going to mean in reality for people. I know you've got some numbers to kind of illustrate that.
Yeah, because it's an important point and it's been a almost semi-permanent feature of the last number of budgets. And from the announcement in November, it looks like it's going to be here for a little while longer. So it's not billed as a tax rise, but effectively it's freezing of thresholds at which you start to pay higher rates of tax. If those thresholds remain static, which they have done for a number of years, then and your wages are increasing, hopefully by or at or above inflation, gradually you're going to enter those higher rates of tax and be paying more, you know, more taxes than
you're
might
just
otherwise
fall into it, aren't you?
Yeah, and what they've announced. So I think we knew that was going to be frozen until about 2028, 2029. That's now been extended to 2031. And I mean, that's still five or 6 years off. And bear in mind the rate of inflation that we've been running at, that is going to drag a lot more people in. And
so, I mean, until recently, fairly recently, we've had double digit inflation. I mean, it was running at 10% a couple of years ago.
Yeah. So people are racing towards those higher rates of tax. I think if you look back as far, I had a little look this morning, if you look back as recently as 21, 22, I think it's something like 8% of the population, I think, were higher rate. And I think if you go back, you know, a number of years before that, it was something that very few people paid higher rate tax. It was something you really inspired to. By 2031, they think it'd be one in four will be paying higher rate. So it almost started to become
25%
the norm. And bear in mind, you know, the students, et cetera, coming out from universities with sort of the hefty sort of tuition fees and loans they're coming out with these days, paying an extra 9%. You know, there's going to be quite a chunk of the working population going to be paying north of 50%, including national insurance.
Yeah.
So this
idea of a kind of a comfortable middle class is kind of, it's a thing of the past in many ways, isn't it? You know, that kind of, you know, that, you talked about the, you know, the aspiration of achieving that. You know, and the reality is it'll just happen by default.
Now the aspiration is to try and get additional rate and be paying over 45%.
That's quite worrying, isn't it?
Yeah, it does fix a big whole, chunk in their finances,
but the reality is for most people that their net household income isn't going anywhere.
Yeah, I think if people are comparing gross salaries with inflation and feel like they're keeping ahead, I think it's probably more important to look at what your net salary is doing versus inflation. Yeah. Bearing in mind, obviously we'll talk a bit more about why some of the costs are rising and inflation staying where it is.
Living standards.
I think that's why people are feeling the pinch a lot more. Yeah. They're winning in terms of promotions and pay rises and not really feeling like they're feeling the benefits of it.
Yeah, and people that have got money, perhaps people who are retired on final salary pension schemes or whatever, which are also now a thing of the past, they're all moving abroad. We've got this wealth drain, haven't we? If you look at the kind of the migration figures that were published last week, I think, we've actually got a lot of our, more wealthy or more affluent residents, citizens, leaving the country.
And people say, oh, they won't really leave. But I mean, we do have clients. We are advising clients. We know of people that have left, will leave.
Yeah. Yeah.
In a way, you've obviously got to be abroad for at least 5 years, to stand a chance of benefiting. But, if you can be effectively paid to live abroad for 5 years and your circumstances allow it, I completely understand why people are using that as part of their tax strategy.
Actually, if you buy a property in somewhere like Greece and you spend $500,000, they give you a free passport with it. So you become a new citizen.
That is the thing. There are a number of countries that do have, and we speak to a lot of advisors overseas as well. There are a lot of regimes and schemes abroad that are, we're doing the pushing, but they're doing the pulling in terms of attracting some of our wealthiest citizens over there with their sort of 5-10 year incentive plans that make it very, very favourable indeed.
You can see why it's happening,
So, and bear in mind, those people aren't just leaving with their own wealth, but some of these are, are entrepreneurs and business owners and wealth creators if they remain, they're actually, we're not just leaving with their own tax, but the tax that their businesses generate. It's definitely not to be underestimated.
Quite a worrying trend.
Yes.
Let's talk about pensions in the context of all of this as well, because there was some interesting new announcement around, maximum kind of pension contributions caps related to national insurance and things like that. So
this is one we didn't see coming, or rather about an hour beforehand we did, but
we won't go into that.
Yeah, so the annual sum that you can, there's obviously annual limits that you can put into pensions, and one opportunity would be to have salary sacrifice schemes where you could swap your earned salary, whether you're a well-paid employee or a business owner, and switch that for pensions, which would be free of tax, and also there'd be the national insurance saving for yourself and for your employer. Mm-hmm. And quite often you would probably sort of split the difference and benefit that way. So it's encouraging people to save and put aside for later, so they're not relying on the state. Yeah.
And you might be drawing that out at a lower tax rate.
That would be the idea. So if you can save,
retire on the amount of money that you earn currently.
No. So if you can save at 40-45% on the way in, and hopefully if you're only paying sort of 20% and obviously no national insurance on the way back out, then that's obviously the aim. But I think two things have come out of sort of recent, well, this budget and the one before, is that there's obviously now slightly less incentives for putting money in, and then on the way back out, if you don't need to draw on your pension and it sits there as a pot on your death, it's now falling into your death estate as well. So obviously
inheritance tax, you mean?
Yes, your inheritance tax. So and that's at 40% as well, which is higher than most people would like to pay.
Above the threshold of whatever it is.
Yeah.
$750,000, is it?
It depends on your, married couple. You'll get, it's about, there's two types of band. Mm. Yeah, the grand total, for a married couple, can be up to £1 million of their combined estate that can be exempted. Yeah. But if you just took an individual with their normal, zero nil rate band of 325,000, if they had £1 million estate and a 400,000 pension, under the old rules from before it fell into the IHT net, they'd pay about £270,000 of tax, or their descendants would. And now that will increase to 430,000. So it's a big jump. And I think obviously as accountants and tax advisors, we're not allowed to advise on pensions, but I think it's something that business owners and individuals have got to really think about, not just how they're going to benefit from reliefs now and whether they need the income now, but you've kind of got to, almost with a crystal ball, see how and when you're going to use it later in life as well to really know what the best strategy is. So we said earlier, it's sort of changing behaviours, and it's definitely less of a tax tool that it used to be.
Yeah, and also related to this is dividends as well, isn't it?
Yeah, so we saw
how small business owners take money from their business.
Yeah, and it's sort of various forms of sort of investment income. So I think we saw, or we're going to see, a small increase in tax rates for property income, savings income, and dividend income. Interestingly, I think it's about 2% across the board. Interestingly, apart from additional rate taxpayers, their dividend rate will still stay the same at 39.35%, but 2% increase across the board. And they're all going to kick in at different times as well. So I think property and interest kicks in 27, and the dividend comes in as early as next April. So again, planning now, 2% may or may not make much of a difference, but it's something that business owners need to consider, and whether they accelerate any dividend income this side of the new tax year.
So, and going forwards, will that even be any kind of incentive to pay yourself that way, or is it just a waste of time now?
Well, 5-10 years ago, we'd be saying if someone came and asked us, it would always pay, small salary, high dividends used to be the optimal tax strategy. That kind of gap between fully employed or self-employed versus salary and dividend, that gap's been eroded over a number of years. We saw corporation tax increases, reductions on national insurance, increased the dividend tax rates. So every step of the way.
Dividend threshold as well, wasn't
there? Yeah, and that's gradually, and that's now down to 500. So it's been gradually eroded. And I think thanks to that 2%, we're pretty sure. I think maybe the answer last year was it depends, or it was marginal, or made no difference. And now I think that gap is pretty much all but gone. So I think those decisions now are non-tax related. It'll be down to, are you in a risky industry? Do you need to operate as a company? If you are, maybe salary's best. Well, if you're doing,
that's a really good point. We haven't even talked about. Is it even worth having a limited company today? Or, am I better off as a sole trader?
I would say not for tax reasons. Yeah. So I think it's, you're now considering all the other factors. So that sort of the tax tail doesn't.
Ooh, personal liability and things like that, I guess.
Yeah, and trading status. Also, there are some other incentives. So I think research and development, there's a lot of tax credits and incentives around that. So if you're in an industry or sector where you can benefit from that, then salary, even for a number of years, salary, actually high salary has been a much better
thing.
Even
that has attracted a lot of scrutiny, hasn't it, from HMRC over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
So, it used to be seen as a convenient vehicle for many businesses to.
I think. In recent times, we didn't see too many, there weren't as many challenges, but there's a lot more scrutiny on those claims. They've got to be notified.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more. I think rather than doing sort of full investigations into claims that have been, I think they're just sort of, softening the reliefs and the credits that are available. And tightening on the rules a little bit. So just to try and sort of, police it in advance rather than in retrospect, but
so lots to think about there. And then of course we've got the national living wage going up, and also the national minimum wage for 18 to 20 year olds going up as well. So I mean, you have to remember, and I think Andrew, I was watching Andrew Marr giving some commentary on this. You have to remember, this is a socialist government. This is a Labour.
We shouldn't be too surprised, should we?
This is a Labour government. Yeah. So, the agenda is always going to be slightly different, to what a Conservative government or any other government
Yeah.
You know, might decide is important. And it's about trying to lift people fundamentally out of poverty. You know, so when we talk about, you know, lifting benefit caps on two-child families, when we talk about things like national living wage going up from, what is it, 12.21 to 12.71 an hour, national minimum wage for younger people going up from 10 to 10 pounds 80. You know, there is a reason behind that.
Yeah.
But of course, in the context of everything else we've just been discussing, when it comes to, you know, tax thresholds and things like that, invariably, they'll just catch it all back that way.
Yeah, and I think, and the, you know, it's that sort of those groups of people that will feel the pinch of rising costs more. Absolutely. So I think where it's a good headline, whether it has the long-term effect that they hope it would do, I don't know. I don't know if we'll see sort of sharp reductions in unemployment. But the, you know, these increases to wages does put a lot of pressure on certain, especially service industries, you know, care sector, hospitality. There's a real squeeze on it, and the automatic impact is that those businesses to survive have got to adjust their pricing, which is really almost directly hurts the same group of people. So I think it'd be hard to measure, but it'd be interesting to see what the real sort of benefit to those sort of group of people would be in the, when the dust settles. So
indeed. So I think what we're going to do, we're going to take a little break there. We're going to play a little bit more music. We've got some Sammy Davis Jr. And then when we come back, Simon, I'd like to just close on, you know, final kind of words of wisdom for people listening today in terms of, you know, whether you're a small business owner or, you know, somebody in employment, you know, thinking about all of the impact of this on your life. So we're going to play a bit more music. Then we're going to finish the show. And just kind of wrap things up. So do stay with us and we'll be right back after this. In terms of sort of closing thoughts from you in terms of advice to, you know, small business owners perhaps who are tuned in today, what's your kind of thinking there?
I think looping back to what I said at the start, Martin, is that, you know, it's a very complicated landscape. There's lots of announcements recently and in November. And a lot of different things happening, rates and reliefs, all kicking in at different times over the next 4 or 5 years. So I think, you know, there are opportunities, and I think the people that will benefit will be those that do their planning early and really have a look at it. I think sort of just sort of letting it happen to you and burying your head in the sand is the worst thing you can do. But there are things you can do, even things on, if you're about to start a business, it's worth having a real think about the structure of your new business before you even set it up.
Definitely.
There's some of the release we talk about at the top of the show, you know, can only be really put in place at the start. So opportunities are there. It's about planning and taking good advice, really.
Being proactive.
Absolutely.
Don't bury your head in the sand.
No.
Talk to your accountant.
Exactly.
So on that note, well, give us a shout out for your website if you can.
No problem. You can find all our sort of details on our website, www.burgesshodgson.co.uk.
Brilliant. Fantastic.co.uk. And I'm sure there'll be a budget synopsis on there as well. Everything that we've discussed today
there'll be a few articles.
In detail for people to refer back to. Simon, thank you so much for being with us today. We do have to close the show out. We're running into the news on the hour. I won't be back now until the 19th of January, Monday the 19th. We'll have two more super guests in the studio. So all that really remains for us to do is to say Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And we'll be back with you in 2026.
Thank you very much, Martin.
So bye for now.